Bill and Gunnan, welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you today. We're going to be talking a little bit about a number of things, and I think one of the big ones is Australia's formal recognition of a Palestinian state. It's joined a number of UN member states, including the UK, Canada, and many others at this stage.
You sent a price to the native trooper. No other way of putting it. You can't call her anything else but that. She's there now, put forward by Australia to bring the Indigenous people, the original owners of the place, bring them to within Australia, keep them within Australia.
Hey, Bill and Gunnan, welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you today, and a very special thank you to Bumma Bipra 98.7 FM, who carry this particular show, podcast, on the Yidinji territory, but also if you're listening inside of Australia, it's via the National Indigenous Radio Service, or NIRS, and wherever you are listening to the program, we just thank you once again for letting us use your airspace and for joining us in this conversation. And today we've got Vico's son, Yirilum, and Ganyara. Bumi is currently out of the territory. He didn't want me to tell you where he is because he's on a holiday, which is good. And but he'll be back next week on the show, and so we look forward to that and hearing some of the stories. We're going to be talking a little bit about a number of things, and I think one of the big ones is Australia's formal recognition of a Palestinian state. It's joined a number of UN member states, including the UK, Canada, and many others at this stage, to, I guess, recognise that formal recognition. But before we do that, we talked about Jacinta Price a few weeks ago on the show and how she was sort of relegated to the backbenches of the coalition shadow ministry. Let's have a listen to her. She's recently talking about at CPAC about Indigenous rights, about promoting Indigenous rights inside of Australia and how to provide solutions for that. This is on Sky News recently.
Jacinta Namba-Jimpa Price is a rock star. She was so at CPAC this weekend in Queensland. She joins us now and I believe is in beautiful Darwin, of course, the Senator from the Northern Territory. Nice to see you, Jacinta. How was CPAC? I watched your speech in full and crikey, you're good at it. You are very good at it.
Yeah, cheers, Paul. Look, it was great. It was wonderful to be with over 1,000 people that we know are like-minded, common-sense individuals who all want what's best for Australia, all want to just be proud Australians. It was great to be able to come together for the conference, for CPAC, so that we could understand that, you know, we're not alone. We have got each other and there is hope for our future if we continue to fight for what is best for our country ultimately.
Now, I saw some of the reporting in and around particularly your focus on a message to the next generation, all right? Now, anyone who had actually seen the speech, heard the speech, understands that you're trying to offer inspiration to younger people to say, hey, you know, you're part of the solution, not the problem. Don't worry about victimhood. Mm. Work on yourself. Mm. Push yourself forward. Give us an idea about what you mean about a younger person or the next generation working on themselves. What is an example of the sort of stuff that puts them in the right place?
Yeah, look, and I think, and I think at the beginning of the outset of my speech, I paid tribute to Charlie Kirk, who was a wonderful example of a young person who first and foremost puts his family first, puts his faith first, puts his family first, but ultimately believes in the ability for an individual to stand on your own two feet, because ultimately responsibility is freedom, is freedom. When you can take your hands in your life and determine your future for yourself, well, then that is ultimate freedom. And I think for our young people, they've been told to be ashamed to call themselves Australian. But it begins with a sense of pride in who you are and the country you belong to. But also, you know, education is so important. And a lot of young people, I feel, are frustrated. I speak to a lot of uni students who are frustrated at their woke lecturers and the sort of ideology that's being shoved down their throat. And ultimately, it's time for them to challenge the education system in those spaces, because it's about learning how to think, not what to think, I suppose, as Charlie Kirk would put it.
Yeah, I often, and again, forgive me for wondering out loud, one of the great sins of public discourse, but I'm somehow going to bring it back, which is that I always sort of think about that quite often people like you and I will get involved in conversations with very well-meaning people who understandably are very frustrated with either the way things are going or where the things have already gone. And I'm starting to get to the point now where I'm saying, look, I know what the problem is, but do your bit to build a life raft, right? You're not going to be able to get 27 million people in there, but if you can get your household in there, and then maybe you can get a couple of mates in there, and maybe you can get your neighbour in there, then slowly but surely a whole bunch of life rafts start to get us into a different direction. Mm-hmm. How far off the mark is that logic where, again, it's not just about yourself, it's about the people under your roof or the people in your circle?
Mm. Totally. I think it's so important. And that's the thing. If you know yourself, if you know your own flaws and you're prepared to look at yourself and work on yourself, and when you have been able to do that, you can become so much more better when you contribute to your community, to your family, to those that you love, and more broadly to your family as well. And I think there is so much sort of emphasis from left ideologues about the victim mentality and being inward looking, and the world has to change to suit who we think we are. But ultimately, for a lot of young people, that's not working for them, evidently. And I feel like there's a real pushback right now. There's a shift occurring, and young people are realizing, no, we have to be honest, we have to be true, we have to deal with facts, we have to deal with evidence, as opposed to ideology, and that is what brings about a better society. It's what Western societies are built on, ultimately, and I think there's a real pushback now against woke ideology and the way that victimhood mentality has been ultimately oppressing people. Like, let's use the words of the left, which is what is true. It's oppressive, and it has been oppressive, and I think many Australians, including young Australians, are sick to death of it. They're over it. They want to change. And I think that change is happening right now.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah, sister. Thank you for saying it. We really appreciate you being a leading voice in this. Before I let you go, I want to talk about the Australian Prime Minister in the UN. Like-minded countries, as they say, are all going to recognise Palestine. It won't matter because it's up to the Security Council. US will veto it, meaning thanks for the chat, nothing's happening. What I love here is the Prime Minister constantly saying, well, we set our own policy, we do it all out on our own. Well, if that's the case, why didn't we do it last year? Oh, no, we had to wait for the cool kids to all join us as well. What does that tell you about what is really playing out this week?
Oh, well, look, I mean, our Prime Minister is weak. Like, he likes to think that he's part of some kind of gang, but when the gang of terrorists and a death cult are praising you for a second time, evidently you're doing something wrong. And his leadership, like, I mean, there are all Australians that are beside themselves because he's gone and made this decision on behalf of all Australians, and rightly so. I mean, It is disgusting to think that they voted for supporting terrorism, ultimately. These terrorists now think that they have the right to continue acting out as they have been, terrorising people. I mean, the three poor Gazans who were executed on the same day that our Prime Minister, along with the UK and Canada, recognised Palestine, is just, where are these global leaders? Where are their heads at that they can turn a blind eye to terrorism? And ultimately, what they're saying is, we're accepting of this kind of conduct, this kind of behaviour, and that makes our lives dangerous also back in our own countries, because it signals to those who would wish to cause us harm, the same way Hamas has caused harm to the Israelis and to the Gazans, and as we've just witnessed, three innocent Gazans today, then that is putting us in a very dangerous, precarious position, and our leadership looks weak. Well, it doesn't look weak. It is weak. I mean, especially coming off the back of not being able to sign a defence treaty with PNG. It is weak and it's disastrous and it's disgusting.
Senator, we love you. Thank you for making so much time as you do for us. We'll see you again in a couple of weeks. Follow her on socials. Get the message. Thank you, Jacinda. We love you. Say good day to Pima.
Yeah, welcome back. Gunyara, what were your thoughts on that particular conversation there? Obviously, Australia's hell-bent on keeping Indigenous peoples convinced that it's the only way to reduce homelessness and promote Indigenous peoples' rights inside of Australia, but obviously we beg to differ.
Look, Jacinta Price is a native trooper. No other way of putting it. And you can't call her anything else but that. She's there now, put forward by Australia to bring the Indigenous people, the original owners of the place, bring them to within Australia, keep them within Australia. They're all Australian citizens. They all are seen through this legal identity. That's her role in life by the looks. And to me, because she's got some Indigenous blood in her, she really should be held accountable under tribal law. Now, didn't we go to the Uluru Statement a few years ago and they said, look, the Aboriginal people own the place under their law, not under Australian law. You own diddly squat under Australian law. You own nothing. Yet she wants to be an Indigenous Australian. Look at me. Look who I am. I'm Senator Price. You know, look at me. Come in and you can be just like me. You can be a slave within the system called Australia, the Commonwealth of Australia, the one that's got no right to be here, by the way. So I see her as a native trooper. She's saying, you know, we know the answers. We know the problems. We know the answers. No, she doesn't. She hadn't got a clue, because if she had any idea, she'd be getting onto the 10 or so constitutional experts that the Prime Minister had picked at the time, had appointed with regards to the recognition campaign. Go and have a talk to them. Go and see what they say, because I've got the FOIs, the Freedom of Information, on a couple of letters that were sent out by them to, like from the Federal Attorney General and also from that group there to the Attorney General and to senators about what the true state of play is. True state of play is Australia owns nothing. Australia cannot influence the Aboriginal people. It cannot do anything to them within its constitution. Australia, for whatever it is, and it's a manifestation of colonialism, and it must go back to where it come from. It's a form of colonialism. There's no ifs and no buts about it. Actually, the High Court says so in the Chet Cuddy case. You know, when the indivisible crown manifested into the crown and right of Australia, get all your crowns and go back to where you come from, or do a deal, do a treaty, do something, what they were talking about in the Uluru Statement. So Jacinta Price, you know, is a native trooper, like all those people. And look, no, I don't hold any bones against her. It's the illegal identity that I see, not the woman. But she's giving substance, you know, to the identity. And she's there to entice the Aboriginal people in. Not to do the right thing. She said, we've got to do the right thing by Australia. She's doing the exact opposite. It is the wrong thing by Australia, by the Commonwealth of Australia. She's doing the total opposite to where she should be. She should be saying, okay, look, we need to settle the past and secure the future. How do we secure the future for all Australians? You mean a treaty, but a nation can't treaty with itself. That's what John Howard said in 92. A nation cannot treaty with its people. We're all talking about treaty, 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 but where's the other party to the treaty? Because Australia's only one party to it.
Yeah, I think people might have entered into that world with good intentions, let's say, but ultimately the system is designed in a way where you do have to, swear allegiance to King Charles and all those things, and fair enough, that's their system. But there is this other crown here. There is the Arunda crown, there is the, the Yidinji crown. There are other crowns on this land, and when we talk about that royalty, it's the tribal society we're talking about, even though we're using an English type of a description. Well, Murrumbawl is the Yidinji word for crown or the headdress, but in terms of what you're saying there, that the British crown or the Australian crown have to go back to their original places, and that's what decolonisation is. So you're right there. I think that there needs to be an adult conversation and around the whole idea of who's who in the zoo and what the true story is.
Look, let's go to Canada, see what happened there the other day. When the court basically said that the Aboriginal title is superior to everything else, the fee simple title issued by Canada is totally inferior. While there's Aboriginal title there, which is why they're trying to keep the Aboriginal people inside Australia, so your title doesn't come back. If your title doesn't come back, fee simple superior. But when your title is revitalised, then their title is inferior. The fee simple becomes worthless. It's the first in time law. That's what they were saying in the Uluru statement. You own this place under your law. The Federal Court Justice Dowser said in the Native Title, you have a system, Yidinji, you have a system of land tenure. That's the system of land title. We own the land. We own it under our law that's not Australian. We're outside of Australian law. We're foreign to Australian. So that's what I'm saying. We're one party to a treaty. Australia's another party to a treaty. Until the settlement of land is sorted, there will be no safety or security for Australia. Jacinta Price cannot fix this problem inside Australia. Now, the court in Canada said that Aboriginal title is superior to everything else. No ifs, no buts about it. So the Canadian fee simple is a worthless piece of paper until a treaty is done properly in the correct standing and capacity. You've got to be in your original capacity. You've got to be in your tribal capacity, not as a Canadian, not as Australian. You've got to go back to your side of the table, Jacinta. And I'm glad you mentioned Arundel. I think that's over in the middle there where roughly somewhere he may come from. Her lineage may go back to there. And she should be explaining this to them for Australia to get security. And there's a piece of land over there that Australia had no right to lease out, by the way, and that's that Pine Gap. Now, that's a very strategic intelligence centre for the US, or actually for the collective West, for the Five Eyes. Did Australia have the right to lease that piece of land out? That's just like Diego Garcia. The British had no right to lease out that piece of land. And look at the conflict that's going there. So same back here. So our title, the Arundel title, should be issued for that piece of land in no uncertain terms to get security of tenure to that piece of land. Australia has no right to do it. And if I was Donald Trump, by the way, I'd remind Albanese of that. I'd remind Albanese that you don't have a right to issue land titles if the Aboriginal people do. If they own the place, did you get consent from them to let us have that intel base over there? Did you get consent? Did Australia get consent properly? So this is what I'm saying. Jacinta Price is not remedying anything. She's claiming she's got all the answers and we can sort out inside Australia. No, you can't. You cannot do that. It's an impossibility. Because you are being seen, the woman, I'm not talking about the woman. The woman is being seen legally and politically through an identity that's created in Australia. So to do it properly, she's got to go back to her original status, wherever that may be. And, you know, we've got to be very careful of tribal law because tribal law removes people from speaking for country. It's a very, very dangerous world to go into if you don't understand it. Just like Yidinji, women don't speak for country here. Women cannot speak for country. That's the men's role in Yidinji tribal elders. And not some gammon make-believe elder. They've got to be proper blood connection, you know, male, 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 unbroken male connection to the ancestors, go back, predates colonisation. So it's very important to understand this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Yirrlim, it's not a surprise that that system that has gone all around the world is based off left versus right or this very divisive adversarial type of approach. And it doesn't matter if you're a Liberal senator or a Labor senator or a Green senator, the whole point is that the Indigenous rights and the capacity we're talking about now under tribal law and creating a government using that is sort of pushed to the side to further advance Australia.
Yeah, Gagnari, you said that Jacinta Price can't solve the problem. Well, that she can, if. So what's the big if? What has to be given up for that problem to be solved?
Jacinta Price, the legal piece of paper, can do diddly squat. The woman that's seen through the legal identity can go back to her tribal capacity.
Sure, but if she stays an Australian and she invites everyone else to become and stay Australians and not take up their sovereignty, that's them solving the problem. So what does it look like? If you become a full-blooded Australian with no sovereign rights at all, what have you lost?
You've lost everything. You've lost your right to talk about anything. But there's one thing to remember. A tribe is never dead until the last one is dead or gone, legally. The tribe will always be there if there's one alive. Now, Yidinji aren't dying and they're not going away. So say all the other tribes die and go away. Has Australia gained security if Yidinji is still here doing its thing? Think about that.
Well, the other part of it that I was thinking of is that, you know, if you don't take up your sovereignty and you don't establish your legal status within your sovereignty, you're left as only as an Australian. which as an Indigenous person is no different to a Chinese person or any other person that's Australian. You know, it's just everybody's the same in that area. And that's not the truth. It's not that we're not, we are all equal in spirit, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about the legal status of human beings.
We're talking about what you're seeing legally and politically through, not the human itself. That's why I said Jacinda the woman in Australia participates. And this is where most people go wrong. The birth certificate is your door into Australia. That's how you are allowed to participate in the Commonwealth of Australia. It's good for nothing else. There's no money attached to it. There's no other rubbish attached to it.
What if you have your tribal name on that birth certificate that's Australia?
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. It's still, if your name is that, Australia cannot, until they do formal recognition, till they recognise the tribes, they cannot recognise the name that's on that you have tribally. That's why people have got to be so careful.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's, I think there's a point of confusion, at least it was for me back 4 or 5 years ago, where the belief that your tribal position is separate. How can it be separate? You know, the only way is, when I came to Yidinji, that was the understanding that I gained, is that the only way that you can have your true identity, your tribal identity, separate to Australia is to create your own identity within your sovereign nation.
You mean you're talking about the coexisting sovereignty? Is that what you're talking about? I remember reading something about that. Now, the Prime Minister back in 2015, with the blessing of the opposition, appointed a whole group of people to go forward and try and work this out. And it ended up with the Uluru Statement coming out in July 2017, end of June, start of July 2017. They said, coexisting sovereignty. Hang on. Sovereignty cannot coexist. That's an impossibility at law unless there's a formal agreement, unless there's a treaty in place between these sovereign nations, between these two coexisting sovereignties. The two cannot exist. So then it goes back to position in time in law. First in time is always best in law. That's why I said, until the tribe is dead, you know, until all the mobs leave Australia, this old tribal law is never dead. So Australia can never gain security forever if there's one in the tribe that's still alive, but just one of the tribes. Think about the consequence now. Say for example, you know, all our tribe dead bar me. I'm the last one left, and the North Koreans come along, or the Chinese, or the Americans, doesn't matter who it is, and they come along and say, we want to do a deal. How about we do a proper treaty? I'm the last one left. I sign off on that. Where's Australia's security? All of a sudden, the American flag is raised on the hill over here, or the North Korean flag, or the Chinese flag. Until they sort that problem out, there will never be security for Australia here ever. Which raises another point that Jacinda brought up about the recognition of the state of Palestine.
Well, let's cross that after the break. You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today. We'll be back after the break with more.
Hello, my name is Andrew, and I'm from Arnhem Land. My band called Andrew Guru Band, and you're listening to BBM 98.7.
Yeah, welcome back to the show. Obviously, Australia has decided to recognise the Palestinian state, and at the UN there, and it's interesting that Palestine has received official recognition from Australia, Canada, and a few others there, but yet Indigenous nations like Yidinji, for example, are not formally recognised. Are you surprised by that at all, Ganyara?
No, not really. The UN is a dead entity. The United Nations is a piece of paper created by the UN member states, of which Australia was one of them. It was one of the founding members. Going back 1945, and just like the US, just like Russia, just like all these people who participate in the creation of a dead entity, to which, by the way, Australia surrendered some of its sovereignty to have this creation over and above. So Australia is not a wholly sovereign nation, which is a real concern when you go to talk about treaties with Australia from the Aboriginal people. It's not a wholly, solely Australian sovereign nation. It's part of the UN. But the hypocrisy of it all is that Australia has chosen to recognise another potential UN member state. That's all it is. There's nothing about it other than it's not recognising us. It's got no security here. It doesn't own the place. We own the place. The tribal people own this place under law. And by the way, Australia does not represent us at the UN. It's got nothing to do with us. They've got no right to act for and on behalf of us. We are our own world. Australia has chosen to not recognise us, legally or politically, which is a real problem for Australia. That's what I keep coming back to earlier. This so-called recognition of Palestine, the height of Australia to go forward and say this. Now, whether it's right or wrong is completely irrelevant. Whether Palestine is right or wrong, it's got nothing to do with us. Whether the state of Israel is doing what it's doing as a UN member state is nothing to do with us. Now, the tribal status is here that Australia is what I keep talking about. Australia is not secure in any way, shape or form. The Commonwealth of Australia, being a manifestation of colonialism, is acting contrary to the Charter of the UN. Now, that's in Resolution 1514, Article 1. To do anything but get out of the country, you're acting contrary to the Charter. So what's the good of the Charter of the UN if Australia can't uphold its obligation to that Charter? You know, even the International Covenants, the ICCPR, for example, it says they're all people are free to do as they got to do. But who are the people of Australia? Where is their tribal country? Where is their tribal status? Where is there anything to do with our part of the world? Because when we come back and own our territory, which is what is said in the Native Title Determination, which is what is said by the Uluru Statement, which is what is said by the way, the constitutional experts that give this stuff that I have under this FOI, only a couple of years ago said we can't affect what the Aboriginal people do or say or whatever. Even quite contrary to what is going on, one of the constitutional experts have said to us, and only just the other day they even reiterated again, that be careful of the treaty status. You know, be careful of what you're doing so you don't cede any of your sovereignty. Just be very careful, and we're very aware of this. Now, this is coming out of one of the academic place of the fortress of Australia, the academic fortress, which is down in Canberra. You know, they're saying, you know, we understand where you are. We understand that you have sovereignty, which means Australia has nothing. And that raises the question with me, can Australia legally recognise us, legally and politically? Because there's an old maxim of law, you know, whatever is on your territory is subject to your law and authority. Now, we can empower Australia, by the way, to do something, but they can't do a treaty with us in any way, shape or form, let alone a state. Now, Professor Craven, who was on the constitutional expert panel, said state-based treaties are total rot. They're just nothing but a blunt axe and gaudy beads. He said that back in 2015. Professor Anne Toomey, she was on the constitutional panel as well. Same thing from her. These will not be, if you do it as a state-based treaty, they will not be nations at law that can do treaty. Australia is just doing a gammon deal because the federal government can overturn anything that the states do. That's part of the power of the constitution. So it has to be with Australia, but Australia can't offer us anything. We offer to Australia the terms and conditions of a treaty, and there's no other way about it. But fancy them going out recognising someone else before they come and say, look, boys, we need to sort this mess out. We're in a hell of a predicament, and we can sort it out. We're the only ones who can. Or maybe the Americans might want to come along. Maybe Donald Trump can see this and tell Elbow, you're gammon. You're all make-believe. You can't do this because they can over there. You can't. So how about I go and talk to them and I'll take the country. I'll kick you out. You know, this is where the power of this treaty stuff is so powerful. Australia must be very careful.
Yeah, what I find interesting is Australis and Palestine are Latin names. So, you know, these are given by the Roman authorities, let's say, or influences of Rome. And so it's interesting that they get recognition before the tribes do. When the Doctrine of Discovery, the Pope said go out and take the whole blooming planet. And if there's no Christians there, or so-called Christians, what people might want to say so-called Christians, you can claim it.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the Doctrine of Discovery. The Doctrine of Discovery is if there's no one there. This was amongst the Europeans, not us. if you have a look at the Worcester case, it actually says that if there's people there, you haven't discovered nothing. You've got to go and do a deal with them. But it's only amongst the European nations, you know, England, France, Germany. When we go and discover something, that's amongst us. We know there's people there and we're supposed to do a deal, and it does not. This is where everyone gets it wrong. The Doctrine of Discovery does not take away the sovereignty of the people that are there. It's only amongst a deal amongst themselves. When I find something first, don't you come and claim my find so I can do a deal with those natives first. No one else can. That's the Doctrine of Discovery. That's in the American Worcester case. Very simple, very plain. But everyone gets so hell-bent that they discovered Australia. No, they knew Australia was here. They knew we were here. Everyone knows we were here. It's not that they accidentally found something. They know we're here. So we're saying, well, good, the Doctrine of Discovery didn't affect us. It didn't affect our sovereignty. It actually talks about the sovereignty of the Aboriginal people or the Indigenous people or whatever. And Australia, with its stupidity, and the British, you know, with their lack of intelligence at the time and their lying and deceit, said, oh, there's no one there. But it's now been realised that their terra nullius statement, or no one there, we can actually settle the place. We can move in under an act of settlement, and they didn't do conquest. They didn't declare war on our mob, otherwise we would have retaliated. No war, no conquest, no peace settlement. We asked for all this stuff from Australia. Nothing to come to. The act of settlement is under terra nullius, no one there. Or the other second part is, oh, treaty. It's got to be done under treaty, cession by treaty. That's why maybe they're talking about treaty now inside Australia. So fancy them going wanting to recognise Palestine when they got no right to talk for us. And that's why I'm saying Australia does not represent our mob. The Australians may represent Jacinta Price, the Australian citizen. And if Jacinta, the woman, wants to be seen legally through that person, she's part of the game that went and recognised the state of Palestine. You've got to understand law that the citizen is like a cell in a body. It's just part of the bigger thing that you can participate in. And that's what I'm saying about the birth certificate. Through the birth certificate, you can play the game. You can play the Commonwealth of Australia. And you've appointed Albanese to go forward and represent you at the UN world to recognise the state of Palestine. Hang on. We're not in the game. We didn't get a birth certificate from Australia. The human can participate in Australia through it, but there was no deal between the Aboriginal people and Australia to let Australia create an entry point for us into Australia through our tribal name, which is what Yurilin was talking about. It's our tribal name created through our own birth, deaths and marriages or our birth certificate act that allows our people to play inside our world, the one that, by the way, that Australia doesn't have a deal with.
Yeah, Yurilin, any surprises there that Australia has recognised Palestine before Yidinji or all the other different nations that may have a governance model in place now using UNDRIP as a guideline?
No, just more of the same, really. Head in the sand, you know, trying best to ignore the existence of all the hundreds of nations across this continent. And, by taking action like that, demonstrates that, that is the right pathway for, if it's legitimate, I suppose, for other nations outside of our continent. But obviously, the long-standing and obvious challenge for them is to recognise all the nations that have been here since before colonisation and continue to be here. So, unfortunately, no surprise.
Well, this is the key in the Mabo case where they said they couldn't look beyond the skeletal, body of the constitution and whatnot, but Ganyara, Australia's been backpedalling since then because it's trying to work out a way on how it can exist today by not acknowledging the Yidinji Nation in its true and correct capacity, for example, because it sort of takes away any claim that they may think they have. How do you see it playing out? I think that's why they probably had the conversations around the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, saying, yes, these peoples have a right to come back and do it, but then they have Indigenous Australians trying to recruit Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander peoples by heritage into Australia and keep them there maybe and try and, dodge the silver bullet, so to speak.
Well, I don't know if they're trying to dodge the silver bullet. We are the silver bullet that can fix all their ailments. Hang on, who are the four countries that refuse? Who are the four nations that refuse to support UNDRIP in any way, shape or form? They actually said, no, we reject it outright, 100% outright. Canada, America, New Zealand, and oh, good old Aussie. They rejected it outright. Guess what? 2 years later, they accepted it. Yeah, we now accept it. We'll now, agree with what it said there. So it's all about intention at law. Why do they change their way? When you look at Resolution 1514, which is what I keep going back to, of 1960, they know that they are still a manifestation of colonialism. They know they're acting contrary to the Charter of the UN. They know this stuff. And yet they're refusing to solve this problem because they can't dictate to us the terms. The terms are dictated by us, the tribal people. Like I said, you know, what's all these persons and things upon your territory are subject to your law. Guess what, Australia? You aren't first in time. We are. So maybe all of Australia is subject to our law and authority as we start to strengthen, which is what it's all about. We're revitalising our stuff in accordance with the articles of the UN, you know, the ICCPR, the International Covenant, Civil Political Rights, for example, or UNDRIP, or, you know, Resolution 1514. We've got every right to do what we've got to do.
And I think the rule of law is really important for the world of contracts. So the rule of law has to apply here because Yidinji wants to potentially contract with whether it's Australia or Korea or whoever it may be. There has to be that mechanism. So the rule of law, if you subscribe by it and you're promoting, you're going to have to stick by it also.
Go and have a look at the Attorney General, the Federal Attorney General's website. We support the rule of law. Pretty cool. Good, support it. That's your official position. You support that. Pack your port and leave. Where are you going to go? Where's the Australian going to go? They can't solve the problem. We're the remedy for all of their ailments. We are. That's what I said. We're the silver bullets to kill their ailment. They can't force us to join. This is the other part that's so important. You can't be forced into a contract. You have to come in willingly. Free, prior and informed consent. FPIC. Geez, are they going to inform all those Aboriginal nations, or are they going to inform the Australians for that matter? Here's the whole deal. This is what it's all about. We're acting contrary to the Charter of the UN. We've stolen their land. I think Paul Keating said something, oh, we done the murdering and we stole their land and we done the genocide, basically. That's what Paul Keating said at the Redfern Statement. If you read that, go and have a look. It's all there in black and white. The Prime Minister of Australia saying we done all this bad stuff. Now, I remember one of the Malaysian Prime Ministers, or was it Indonesia? One of them said, oh, I threw a couple of people out of a helicopter, the Prime Minister. Philippines. Yeah, that's what it was, the Philippines. I threw them out of a helicopter. Yeah, Duterte, that's it. And then there's an uproar from the international world. We've got to hold him accountable because he killed a couple. But didn't the Prime Minister of Australia say we killed many? We've done this and we've done everything that's genocidal. So, you know, it's all there. So Australia's got to be very careful where it goes. Now, as we revitalise and strengthen ourselves, maybe they might have to be held to account if they don't want to come to the table. Why waste your time recognising the state of Palestine first? You are breaching the treaty, the charter of the UN. Are you a credible group when you breach such a document? Are you a credible group in that world to talk about UN stuff if you are breaking the very basic document that you created?
Yeah, the reason why I mentioned the rule of law and the world of contracts, obviously, there are ways that people who hold an Australian identity want to support the Yidinji Nation, and one of them is through actually becoming a Yidinji citizen, which we promote here on the territory. But also, Vic, I'll bring you in here because part of the nation building exercise is having an economy and building it, and that's where obviously you've taken on the Ministry for Small Business and Innovation, and that's a very important role in knowing that Yidinji has this greenfield opportunity because it's not subject to like the UN standards of business, although we can use those standards, but it's our own law where, you know, we can conduct business our way.
This is actually a fascinating conversation. You know, the world is shifting so quickly in relative time. And I think the points that have been brought up all bring it back to we need to be connected to country. And businesses now are floating in a fiction. So we can actually give them the real connection to country so that they're operating from truth, from contract that actually has standing globally. It's not a fiction behind us. We're actually real. We're connected to country. And we can give people the opportunity to operate out of a jurisdiction that has got standing internationally. So having them operate out of the Yidinji territory not only alleviates some of all the red tape that is tied up with stopping innovation, stopping companies, stopping people grow economies. We can operate a business out of Yidinji territory using the new form of money. There's a global reset happening. The reset is not what a lot of people are believing. The reset is actually using blockchain technology, using peer-to-peer payments so that people can operate internationally from their own country and connect globally with their businesses, grow their businesses, in an environment that actually promotes the individual becoming successful, becoming independent, becoming intelligent, because there's nothing easier to control someone that hasn't got any money and hasn't got the intelligence to work out and problem solve. So we give those people the opportunity to operate out of the dingy territory and for them to grow and use the profits that they make in their business to further develop the country.
Yeah, it's what we talk about often is the security of tenure, security of personality, and keeping, let's say, family businesses, small businesses that operate on the Dingy Territory, where they're going to go in this global meltdown, Ganyara. I mean, this is what we're talking about now, and Vico is helping develop this safe house or that's built on a rock, let's say, as opposed to that floating idea that he spoke of.
Well, we've got to understand that Australia has no right to let anything happen on our country, be it anything, growing grass, growing food, growing cattle, digging the iron ore out, anything. They have got no right to do that. That's the Aboriginal people's right to appoint those people to do it. So how does Australia control its trustees? Now, I say trustees very quickly there, because Julia Gillard in 2012 at the miners' meeting, I think it was May 2012, she made a statement. We hold this place in trust for sovereign people. We immediately wrote off. As soon as we heard that, we wrote off to her. Said, Julia, pretty cool statement you made. You're holding it in trust. Is the trust in place? Thank you very much for that. You're the administrator of the trust because you're letting certain people do certain things. Who are the trustees? They must be Australians because that's all one of the same thing, like a normal trust arrangement. There's the administrator, the trustees, and then there's the beneficiaries. Julia, we must be quite obviously the sovereign people who hadn't ceded any sovereignty or anything like that. We must be the beneficiaries. Who give you the right to put our stuff in trust in the first place? And then so the Australians, being trustees under trust law, cannot profit from the asset that they are administering, that the administrator is administering. So they've got to control everyone. You say, I got a freehold title over my piece of land, yet I can't cut a tree down. I've got to get a permit to cut the tree. That tree belongs to the Aboriginal people, belongs to the nation. It doesn't belong to Australia. So they've got to be very careful what they let the Australians do, which is how I see them contracting everything inside Australia, because ultimately it's got to come back to the original people who are the owners of the trust.
Well, not only that, if there is a trust arrangement, do Aboriginal people know about it? Or you know, does Yidinji know there might be some sort of account with money in there? And no, they haven't provided any of that details as far as I know. You know, so if there's going to be a trust, then who's the beneficiary and how does it work? Because there has to be full disclosure to any type of that. And obviously there hasn't been, to our knowledge. Yirrkala, any deal that is done on the Yidinji territory has to have some sort of accountability and transparency in relation to, you know, who's doing what. And that's a very important thing. Australia hasn't been doing that, honestly.
No, well, like Ganyara just said, who's the beneficiary? You know, it can't be an Australian. If they're holding it in trust, they're holding it in trust for the first people, for the original people, for the people that were here before them. So those people that have always been here can have a choice of two identities, but until they take up their sovereign identity, that trustee can't be paid out to anybody. It remains in Australia and they keep using it, whether it's profit or not.
Yeah, and that's the other thing I was going to bring in. We're not waiting for that. I mean, it could be a pot of gold at the end of a rainbow. We don't know. But the thing is now, we know that Yidinji own the land pursuant to their law. We know they own everything to the centre of the earth, to as far as they can see into the sky, to the night, into outer space. And we're acting now because it is the job of this government is to try and get the Yidinji people back into their rightful position. And we're not waiting for that to happen. We're actually trying to make that happen straight away, Vico.
So one of the good things about trust law is the beneficiary, once they're informed of the benefit they should be receiving, if they believe that the administrator is not doing a good job and they're acting not in the best interest of the beneficiary, it's the beneficiary's role to acknowledge that they're not and to sack them. And we have got that authority on country to do that because we are the beneficiaries. We're the true root to the earth and we have prior claim over the fiction of the Australian government. And they're not administrating the trust very well at all. And that's being globally recognised now by the acknowledgement of the US president. He doesn't want to talk to Albanese because he's not the true administrator doing a good job.
Well, that's if there is a trust. This is what I keep talking about. We don't know anything about it. So it's one of those things where who knows? I'm not waiting around for that. You know, how many rabbit holes we've been down already with this kind of stuff about Swiss bank accounts and all this kind of rubbish in the past. We're moving forward. The Indigenous Nation's got its own currency. Moving forward to have international recognition in other areas in terms of digital assets and currency. So it's one thing to collapse the trust, but we don't even know if there is one or not. So Australia hasn't disclosed that in any way or form to the Indigenous Nation through its government.
I'm glad you mentioned that because when we rode off in 2012, we didn't get an answer back. Nothing. Zero, zip, you know, not a thing. Same as when we said, was there a declaration of war on us? Nothing. Because if there was a declaration of war, we said, well, give us the date. Give us the date of peace. You know, when was that declared? We didn't, nothing come back. Nothing ever. We got to have a look at everything, as they say. But did they ask us about the trust? Did they tell us about the trust? When they took over the place, did they say anything? No, this is an act of settlement. They moved in on our place. They didn't have the right to move in. They came in and sat on our chair for a while. Then they took over the kitchen table. Then they took over the lounge room. Then took over the bedroom. So they just kicked us out of our house, or they tried to. But they made a fatal mistake. They didn't get rid of the law, that one that's always been here, because it's that law, not the humans. It's the law that's at here. So there's no trust in place. And if there was one, they better tell us more about it, because we have collapsed, that we are doing our thing, and they cannot stop us doing that, which is why I'm saying...
Well, let's forget this whole trust thing. What does Article 28 of UNDRIP say? There is an absolute debtor-creditor relationship being established there. Article 28, explain that.
Well, of UNDRIP, Article 28, the UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People, very, very, very plain, very simple. Article 5 actually is the first part we go to. The Aboriginal people have got every right to revitalise all their things, bring back all their institutions, government, you know, courts, be it education, be it anything. We can bring back everything while we retain a right, if we so choose. Very, very important words, those ones there. If we so choose, participate in the life of the state. You can be seen through the Australian identity and participate over there, or you can be seen in our identity and participate in the life of the Indigenous nation, the one that's always been here. Then that leads up to Article 8, where they can't force an Indigenous person to participate in Australia. Makes it very clear there. Forced assimilation against the law, against the rules. Now we go to 28. Now Australia's got to give the place back, or give them somewhere of equal stature, or pay for the place. What are they going to pay for the place with? We sat with Senator Waters and Scullion going back 2017. Said, okay, how are you going to pay us out, you know, our lot? What are you going to pay us? Australian dollars? You can't. We're not going to take that. That's rubbish, absolute rubbish. It's just fiat currency, nothing of value. So we're not going to sell out for that. Because I know the Noongar lot, going back about the same time, done a $1.8 billion deal for Perth. I'll bet you that money now is practically worthless. $1.8 billion is not what it was back then. You know, the loss of purchasing power is incredible. So we said back to them then, can you pay us? You know, what are you going to pay us in? They said, we can't afford to pay you out. One mob. How are they going to pay for the rest of Australia? How are they going to pay all the other mobs out? Because I said, if you pay us, the other lot are going to be screaming blue murder. Why don't you pay us now? Why don't you pay us? They cannot pay for the place. So we're still, if you haven't paid for it, under contract law, until final settlement, until final payment's made, it still belongs to us. You haven't paid us a penny. Sitting inside Australia with Jacinda is not going to achieve anything. Getting a few trinkets at the table is going to be worthless. Like the Noongar lot, you know, I said that they paid the wrong people. The Australians should not have got the money. It should have went to the original tribal people, not the Australian citizen. It had to be an Australian citizen to have a bank account inside Australia. So money was just inside Australia. It wasn't going back to its right deal. Article 28 says so.
The donut economy.
It sure is. It just goes around inside Australia, not doing the right thing. It settled absolutely nothing. Now, I spoke to a constitutional expert about that a few years ago. He said, oh, that was a great treaty. That's the best thing I've ever done. I said, no, it's not a treaty. It's definitely not a treaty, and they paid the wrong people.
You're listening to the Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today. We'll be back after the break with some final comments. Yes, it's coming to the end of the program, but Vico, some Final comments. Obviously, the Yidinja breakfasts are happening, the business breakfasts. What are your comments to encourage people to get involved with the Yidinja?
Look, I think that the world is in very fast transition right now. A lot of people are living and identifying with a fiction, and I think they need to move over and have a look at what we're doing here, look at the system that we've created and allowing them the freedom to make honest contracts and fulfill those contracts so they can grow their own personal wealth and grow the wealth of their economy on Yidinja country, which expands out to the globe.
Yirlam.
As usual, the big thing that sticks out for me in all these conversations is the identity, you know, because most of us are born and are given a birth certificate and think nothing more of it, and yet it's not until you realise that that is only one of many possibilities that you can choose from as a human being. And since I'm born on this country, on Yidinja country, obviously my first and obligation is to that nation itself. So, you know, I have two identities, and it's a worthwhile challenge and road to go down that path for your own nation.
Yeah, wonderful. I you know, I've got to laugh because, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, it is true, and I love the fact that, you know, even in the Bible, when Joseph was sold into slavery, he had an Egyptian persona and he had an Egyptian name, but then he said, he made his family promise to take his bones back to bury him on country. And he also identified as Jewish as well. So it's one of those things where, you know, all the Yidinja bummer, you know, even if they're using an Australian identity or an American one or whatever it may be, they can always come home now, because what a better way to you know, that's where your heart is, and I guess it's that carrying on the law and your obligation. Yeah, you can go do your tour duty overseas somewhere in Australia or whatever, but always come home. And Ganyara, that's the beautiful thing now, that the elders, when you started this with them a long time ago, even before I got involved, you know, I'm just Johnny come lately, obviously, but it's a really important thing that when we talk about trust before, this is a true one, like a proper arrangement where it's not about us making all this money and keeping it to your circle of mates or whatever. It really is about trying to empower the Yidinja Nation and everyone that lives on the territory to keep that sustainability, longevity, whatever you want to call it. But those obligations are very much part of what we're doing now.
It is the obligation of all the people of the tribe. When they come into the tribe, and there's a difference between the tribe and the citizenship, you know, the tribe itself is very serious about its country. They are the true and correct owners of it, and they appoint the Yidinja government to go forward and represent them internationally, which is what it's all about. Which is why it brings up the statement about the hypocrisy of Australia and this recognition of Palestine. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. That's one thing I'll make it very clear, because it's got nothing to do with it. But if I was the US president, I'd be saying, Anthony Albanese, old mate, come over here and have a bit of a yarn. We need to have a yarn about your status in the world as to what you are. Do you have the legal right to talk for all the people over on this piece of the world out here? And he'll have to say, no, I don't. I don't speak for Yidinja, for example. He'll have to tell the president...